cases United States versus RICO. It is docket 20-1050. Mr. Hopkins, please proceed when you're ready.
Yes. I please the court. I'm Lance Hopkins. I'm here for Mr. RICO. This is a one-issue appeal, and our contention is that the district court erred in overruling Mr. RICO's objection to the attempted murder enhancement in the pre-sentence report. There was no proof by a preponderance of the evidence that Mr. RICO was not acting in self-defense at the time he fired his firearm in the direction of Mr. Wright. RICO was shot at multiple times by Wright, which resulted in bullet wounds to RICO's thumb and his arm.
Oh, wait just one moment right there. So I'm sure that I understand we're on the same page. We have to accept the district court's fact findings unless you show us that they're clearly erroneous. So accepting those fact findings, where are you?
Well, those were the facts that was in the record. These guys encountered each other and shot at each other, basically.
Well, there are more facts than that, though. The district court sets out the sequence and who the initial aggressor was and so forth. And so for you to prevail, you have to overcome those facts one of two ways. The facts don't matter because I still win, or number two, that the district court was clearly in error in finding those facts.
Okay, well, I really do believe that in this situation, what we really have, we had two guys that, you know, to be honest, were from probably from rival gangs or had connections to rival gangs. They encountered each other and they saw each other and the shots were immediately fired. Our contention, and both were hit. Both guys were, but my guy was shot in his arm and shot in his hand, has damage to his hand, and the other guy was hit as well. Our argument is this, is that when these guys, that this all happened so fast, that there's just no way that you could, that on these records, that can be proved by preponderance of the evidence that my client was not acting in self-defense.
So part of the, I've got two questions for you. One of them is it your contention that the government had to, as part of its case, refute your self-defense claim, that they had to prove that that was wrong? I mean, typically self-defense is an affirmative defense that would be your burden to prove.
Well, I do believe that in the record, the objections to the pre-sentence report and at the hearing, that my client's counsel, they put forth enough evidence of that he was acting in self-defense to rebut that.
Okay, so I just want to get past the idea. I mean, you're not saying, are you or are you not saying that it was the government's job to prove that there wasn't self-defense? I mean, you had an initial burden, didn't you, of proving that your client acted in self-defense? Didn't you have to make some showing there yourself?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that showing was made with the objections to the pre-sentence report and in the record and the law enforcement reports.
Okay. And now my next question is that the record evidence that the district court seemed to rely on, as I read it, was there was a security guard who said that your client shot first. What's the evidence that your client didn't shoot first to controvert that?
Well, in all candor, Your Honor, I think my client probably did shoot first. However, the other guy was in the process of also shooting him first. It was kind of a Wild West type scene out there, for sure.
How much time separated the two shots from your guy and the other guy?
They were almost simultaneous from my reading of the record. Almost simultaneous. I mean, it was all at once for the most part. But what I would also like to point out to the court is that Wright was the guy that that my client had this exchange of gunfire with, is Wright's actions after being shot were consistent with him being the initial aggressor. Wright was shot in the right thigh. As with any gunshot wound, the injury could have been life-threatening. But Wright did not call 911. He did not seek immediate medical attention or immediate medical treatment. And he did not report the shooting to law enforcement.
But aren't those behaviors equally explainable as just a gang fight? I mean, even if it was not the initial shooter, I would think that those same motivation, that the his potential being complicit in a gang shooting would be enough that he'd want to stay off the radar screen.
And that's a valid point, Your Honor. But it's also consistent with somebody being the initial aggressor.
Okay. Did your client call 911?
I can't recall if he called 911, but he went immediately to the hospital and got medical attention.
Okay. I mean he was apprehended by police, wasn't he? On the scene. Okay. Yes. So the reason he received immediate medical condition or treatment was because he was apprehended.
That's possible. I mean, I don't know whether he would have sought immediate medical attention or not, you know, when this happened.
I thought that he had somebody drive him away rather than being taken from the scene in a hospital or anything. And that he was dropped off at a more remote hospital.
That was the other guy. That was Wright.
Yeah, I thought that's what we were talking about.
No, he's talking about
your guy. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, right.
Yeah, Wright was taken to, he was dropped off at the hospital at Rose Medical Center, which is almost 5 miles from downtown Denver. And there are a lot of other hospitals closer to downtown Denver than Rose Medical Center, such as Denver Health. When he got to the hospital, he lied. The evidence is he lied to the medical people as to what happened.
Now, are you talking about your guy or are you talking about Wright?
I'm talking about Wright. Okay. Yeah. That Wright, but when he got to the hospital, the evidence is he told the people at the hospital that two guys drove him to the hospital and dropped him off. He would not give the names of those two guys. And he told the people at the hospital that he made up a story as to how he was shot and who shot him, and he refused to give the names of those guys that took him to the hospital. He was extremely evasive.
Counsel, it sounded like when you started off your argument, you were talking about the preponderance standard. Do you concede that that's the standard that applies here, the preponderance of the evidence standard, as opposed to clear and convincing?
Yeah, I think so. His counsel at district court made a big argument out of the clear and convincing standard and cited some Ninth Circuit case law. And in my opening brief, I talk about that quite a bit, but as I reflected on it and looked at it, I think if this court will probably find it is a preponderance of the evidence standard. So in our reply brief, and from this point on, you know, our argument is that even if it's in a preponderance of the evidence standard, as opposed to a clear and convincing, there's just no evidence, even by a preponderance of the evidence standard, that he was not acting in self-defense and that he was not the initial aggressor. In all candor, what I think we have here is we have two guys that got in a gunfight, and there's really no way to tell who was the original aggressor. There really isn't. There's really no more evidence that my client was the initial aggressor than the other guy. It's in all candor, it's a Wild West situation for sure.
Judge Bremer was more careful than that. He went through what the video showed. He went through what the witnesses said. And he concluded, as a matter of fact, that your client was the initial aggressor and that your client provoked the confrontation. And those, I think, are fact findings subject to clear error. And so I don't know that it does it for you to come in and say, well, I disagree with Judge Brimmer. You have to show us why what Judge Brimmer said was clearly erroneous, those fact findings. And he had a basis. He explains in the record at the sentencing all of the reasons that he comes to that conclusion. He doesn't just come out of left field with that.
Well, that's true. He did spend a lot of time and was very thorough in that. But I do believe that when this court looks at the record and looks at the facts, that this all happened simultaneously.
Okay. So let's assume that. Let's assume that they drew their guns at the same time and started firing at each other. Wouldn't the government still be able to support the enhancement on that basis? I mean, isn't it the same that your client, on the same evidence that Judge Brimmer could have found that your client was a shooting at the other guy with the intent to kill?
I don't think so, because I can make just as strong an argument that you can make the facts also support self-defense. That if you look at, I mean, this all happened simultaneous, all at once. It was the other guy also shot him. My guy had two bullet wounds.
Right. Well, I mean, the other guy may have had the intent to kill too. I mean, so if you take self-defense off the table, do you lose?
Probably, in all candor. But I think we do have self-defense. I think you could not find a stronger case of self-defense than my client in his situation that night. I mean, he had a guy shoot at him, and it also the guy's behavior after he was shot. He goes to a hospital that's 5 miles away from downtown. There are a lot of other close hospitals closer to downtown Denver. It takes him 45 minutes to get to the hospital.
But even before the shooting, it looks like Rico was kind of a provocateur. I mean, he opened up his coat or whatever it was to show a gun on his waistband, and he flashed gang symbols. So if you are the provocateur and that provocation turns out to be successful and you goad the other guy into taking the first physical act against you, can you then claim self-defense?
Well, I mean, I'll be the first to admit that my client's no choir boy, but the guy that...
We're not using the choir boy standard, but my question is simply, if you provoke the other person to take the first act of violence, can you then assert self-defense because you provoked the initial assault against you? Or do you have to prove that you did not unreasonably provoke the first attack against you?
I think here it's really not all that clear that he necessarily provoked
that question. I'm asking a legal question.
Probably not, in all candor.
Okay, thank you.
I've just got a minute left, so I'll reserve that minute.
Well, Ms. Milani.
May it please the court. Elizabeth Ford Milani for the government. This court should affirm Mr. Rico's sentence. The district court properly applied the cross-reference for attempted murder. Mr. Rico's own admission dooms his self-defense claim. He stipulated that he fired first, making him the initial aggressor on these facts. Now, the language of the stipulation is that Mr. Wright returned fire, but the clear implication of that was that he fired first. And not only was that the clear implication, that's what defendant understood the implication of that statement in his plea agreement being, because he later challenged, then withdrew, whether he fired first. Now, it's not just defendant's stipulation on this point. There's other evidence in the record as well. For instance, DD, the security guard, testified that the person, not testified rather, excuse me, in his interview with police, he said that the person in blue, which matched Mr. Rico's description, shot first. He said that after the person in blue fired five or six shots, the person on the other side of the street returned fire. And TH, another person interviewed by police, said he only saw one person with a gun, and it was not Mr. Wright. So I think that in this case, this fact alone supports the district court's conclusion that Mr. Rico was the initial aggressor. He fired first on these facts. Not only that, I disagree with opposing counsel's contention that the shooting was somehow simultaneous and it was a duel in some way, that both persons were drawing their weapons at some time. The record doesn't say that. We don't know that from the record. What we do know is that after Mr. Rico fired several shots, there was return fire. But I disagree that the shooting was simultaneous in this way.
So what if it was simultaneous? Don't you think you still win anyway?
Probably, Your Honor. And I think that for a couple of reasons. First of all, as the district court found, the defendant provoked any attack. Now, the district court didn't cite the Colorado statutory exception to self-defense of provocation, but I think that those facts have provided a basis for that exception here. Defendant paced through the parking lot, throwing gang signs, using gang-related language. And as the PSR points out, Mr. Wright and Mr. Rico were each members of two different gangs with issues. So I think under the provocation exception, defendants still wouldn't be entitled to use self-defense. And I think also, we just don't have any facts that at the time defendant fired, he was doing so because he saw Mr. Wright with a gun or Mr. Wright was threatening him. The reality is the record just doesn't disclose what Mr. Wright was doing before these moments, before he returned fire. So I think that that also forecloses self-defense for defendant here. I agree that with counsel's concession that this is a preponderance of the evidence standard. The question is, did the government prove by a preponderance of the evidence that the cross-reference was applicable here? And it did. And while defendant cites Mr. Wright's actions after the fact, you know, going to a different hospital than he needed to necessarily go to, not being entirely candid with how this happened, while those could have given rise to a different inference about what happened, the question on clear error review is, what facts support the district court's conclusion, and is it supported? And in this case, that initial aggressor exception is supported by defendant's own admission in the stipulated facts in the plea agreement. If there's any other questions, I'm happy to answer them, but I did want to distinguish the Stroman case that my opponent cites from the Second Circuit. So in that case, the cross-reference was inapplicable in that scenario because the district court never found that there was the requisite mental state for purposes of attempted murder. That's not the case here. Here, the court said, you're attempting to kill that person. And under the plain language of Stroman, that is an adequate finding. If I can answer any other questions.
Well, I'm just curious. I know that Mr. Wright was on one side of the street. Rico was on the other side. How wide was the street? Was it a typical, like 30 feet or so? Or was there any evidence about how wide the street was?
I don't believe there was any evidence about it. My memory of the Halo Cam footage was it was like two lanes on one side in a one-way street. That's my memory. But, you know, I don't want to pin myself to that because I don't entirely remember.
Okay, thanks.
Certainly. If there are any other questions I can answer for the court. I think the cross-reference was appropriately applied here. The district court's findings have record support. And because the defendant was not entitled to use force in self-defense, the cross-reference was proper and Mr. Rico's sentence should be affirmed.
Thank you.
One other thing I'd like to point out, there was another party, another defendant involved in these set of facts. And I believe the government has admitted that my client, Mr. Rico, was not the one that shot the innocent bystander. There was an innocent bystander that was shot and nearly died. But the evidence is that that innocent bystander was shot by my client's co-defendant, not by him. The bullet fragment discovered in the area where the innocent bystander was struck did not come from my client's guns, but instead it matched the gun possessed by his co-defendant. I think that's important to point out. So he did not shoot the innocent bystander. But I see I'm about out of time, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both for your arguments, and the case is submitted.